Hi, everybody, and you're very welcome to the podcast today. I'm speaking with a very inspirational guy telling a very inspirational story who turned his life around and is now a role model to so many people. And I'm delighted to have him with me today. He is the epitome of the phrase never give up. And a very positive chap and very influential. And it's great to be in his company today. Damien Quinn, thanks a million for having a chat with me.
Cheers, Ronan. And nice to thanks for the intro.
Not at all. Look, it's an intro that I don't think it's even enough, to be honest with you, to show the amount of work that you've put in and what you've done and where you are now, how you literally pulled yourself up off the ground, obviously with the help of others along the way, and we'll speak about that. But I just think it's a really, really inspirational story. So to any, I suppose, mothers, fathers, guardians out there that have young children or young adults that may be going down the downward spiral, let's put it that way, I would urge you to listen in. And if you are a young man or a young woman that might be going through a difficult time at the moment, maybe finding it hard to find yourself, knowing who you are, where you are, your self-worth, that kind of an idea, I would urge you to listen in for the next while as well. Damien, there's no better place to start than the beginning, I think is the best way to do it. Speak to me a small little bit about your childhood, national school, secondary school, where'd you go?
Younger years was in England. Like, we were Irish family growing up in Manchester, and national school and kind of secondary school, I was straight A, quiet, geeky, shy, never really felt like I fitted in over there because of the Irish descent and that the problems that brought. And then we moved here into the teen years from England, so we were English over here then, trying to fit into town. So I suppose that was the journey. Like, it was a journey where I didn't really feel like I fitted in anywhere. So we came back here then, and we found education really, really hard, because like Ireland has a higher level of education as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. You know, that was my experience of it. And I had to leave school at the age of around 14 and a half and become responsible for a household and that type of thing. And I went into work at that age. So,
do you think did that change, obviously trying to integrate into society at a very young age, do you think that that was where the issues may have started, with kind of trying to fit in, trying to weave your way into certain circles to say, look, hello, I'm here, I want to belong.
Yeah. Well, that's a big part of it, like, you know, like that whole feeling of not belonging was a big part of why I suppose a lot of my journey turned out the way it did. It can be really difficult to deal with that, not feeling part of, you know, or not being a fully participating member of a class, community, whatever. And, you know, that presents its challenges as well, like, so.
And even finishing school at 14, was that quite difficult? Obviously, you know, at the time, you probably, let's finish up school. 14, it was kind of a cool thing, maybe-ish at the time. Did you find that when you had left school, you kind of went, uh-oh, wait a second, am I on a, what's happening here?
Well, interestingly, I tried two secondary schools over here, Pats and Jarlath. I didn't last any length in any of them because I was messing and I was carrying on. But the day after leaving, getting kicked out of school, I got a job, my first full-time job. It was Tune Furniture Stores when it was open.
Down Shelf Street Shelf there,
Street, yeah. So working between there now and the garden centre out near Milltown. So like that provided me with a few pounds then to kind of keep the show on the road, and you know, so it wasn't that hard. Like, obviously, like I kind of regret on missing out on earlier educational opportunities, but it's part of the journey and part of what made me where I am today. So
yeah, your peer group, looking back at your peer group now, maybe friends that you've built up, or maybe what you thought at the time were friends, maybe, you know, I'm just going to throw that at you at the moment. Did you find that they were a bad influence on you, you know, growing up? Did you find that they kind of give you a bit of not a tough time, but they kind of go, come on, Demo, come with us, you know, and were you easily led?
Definitely. Like I always say, like, when I kind of started going down that route, it was just a reaction to the circumstances that were going on in the life. Like, the family were kind of struggling with different things, and, you know, it was a big change moving from one country to another. So, I just got into medicine, and I suppose it was a rebellious kind of a stage. And then after that, then I found drugs, and drugs then was kind of the only thing that really interested me outside of anything else. Like, so that's how that started.
And if I was to ask you if you had a happy childhood up until 14, would you have said yes or no?
Well, when I think back, like, you know, education was my happiness as a child.
As a child.
So I wasn't very physical. I wasn't into physical sports or anything like that. I loved achieving in education, like, and I was actually quite, when I think about it now, I was quite proud of how well I was doing in England. But then when I came here, then I was just lost. So that was, that in itself was part of the problem, I'd say.
And speaking of the issues in school, what type of stuff would you have got up to?
Well, I suppose in England, like, you know, the whole Irish-English thing, there'd be...
Yeah, bit of banter.
Gerry Adams, all that kind of stuff, they'd be calling me, you know, come back here then, and they'd be taking off your English accent. You know, that was the straw then that broke the camel's back. I remember one lad came into class one day, he said, all right, mate, I just snapped. And so that was the end of that school.
And did you find that, the trouble that you were getting into was getting bigger all the time within the classroom? Did it start off as a little bit of messing, then it got a little bit physical before you knew it, then you were kind of nearly out of control?
Well, that was it. It was a bit of messing back and over. Yeah. And then I suppose there was instances then when it got a little bit too much and you just lose your temper and... Sure, look, that's the way it went.
Yeah.
It was all banter, but I suppose there's all sorts of problems that people don't realise. People are going through at home and that type of stuff. Mm. And just some days you're not up for that.
Now, if you were doing a bird's eye view at the moment, looking down on Damien Quinn at 14, just a little view for a second, what would you tell Damien Quinn of 14 years old now, seeing that you're an adult? Happy?
Yeah. Well,
achieving?
I suppose I wouldn't tell him anything. I'd ask him. I'd say, what's going on with you? Like, you know, I'd try and reach out to him and get him to kind of tell me, you know, what his challenges currently are and what his plans are. I'd definitely be encouraging him to kind of stick with education and get a minimum of the Leaving Cert, you know, that after that, then if you feel like school isn't for you right now, later on in life, like, as is the case with me, I found I really, really wish, you know, education has been a huge part of where I'm at today. Mm. So that was, I'd try and reach him on his level and get him to talk to me about his needs, his problems, and anything I could help him with.
Of course. Coming outside the school gates for a second, obviously 15, 16, 17 years old, you know, those developmental years, if you want to call them there, where you're kind of finding yourself, who you are, where you are, and obviously not within the educational system at the time. Was there major issues in those years as well with your behaviour? Was there any violence knocking about around that time? Did you find that you were rebellious?
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, we used to go to the youth discos and that. There'd always be somebody there to fight that type of thing. There was girls and all that type of stuff. But, like, genuinely, like, it was all really just like a blur. I suppose the big thing for me, like, was just being out of it. You know, that was, like, you take Tuam there now as like... from the employment lenses.
Yeah.
Tuam was a strong manufacturing town.
Yeah, very much so.
Lots of jobs in Tuam. You could bounce around from jobs and that type of thing. And, you know, I had the means then, not only to pay for, to keep the house going and that, but for drugs. And that's all that interested me. It was my first real love was when I got out of it. You know, I loved that feeling and love belonging. That was where I found belonging, was in my peers with drugs and type of stuff.
While you were high, pretty much. Speaking of that, and we will talk about the relationships, obviously, relationship-wise, maybe with girls at the time when you were, you know, 19, 20, you know, you were kind of getting a little bit more serious about relationships. Maybe this is the one for me. Maybe this is the one. Did you find it hard to hold down a relationship?
Yeah, well, that was the thing. Like, a lot of the girls I'd meet or whatever, they wouldn't want that life that I brought with me. Do you know what I mean? But I wouldn't choose them over that life. Do you know, that life was more important to me than them, my family, do you know, even my jobs. Like, really came first in everything that I did.
The suitcase that you carried around was pretty much your belongings, and there was no room for anybody's clothes, and they're only yours.
No, it was nice that they took an interest in all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And certainly some of them would try and fix me and all that type of thing, but I wasn't ready to be fixed by anybody, do you know what I mean? I just enjoyed doing what I was doing.
And did you feel that, I know you've already alluded to this, but obviously when you had your hit, what drugs did you take at the time?
Well, in the early years, it was kind of coke, ecstasy, okay. cannabis, that type of stuff. I've used everything down through the years, like, but...
You experimented on different things?
Pretty much, yeah, anything that came my way, I tried.
And were you indispensable when you were high? Were you the man?
Not really. I was functioning when I was high. So actually, like, I, you know, in that whole game, like kind of getting stuff, moving stuff and all that kind of stuff, I was functional in that capacity. Do you know what I mean? I like to say if there's something I like doing, I like to be very, very good at it. I was very, very good at what I was doing, even though I was like that. That's where I was at that time. Yeah.
Now, obviously, we'll move on to the courts now in a second in incarceration. Did you feel, though, because obviously sometimes it's hard to hold things back, did you feel that you were going down that spiral and you knew that there was obviously court appearances ahead of you? Did you say, look, I'm finding it hard to hold this up here? Or did you feel, wait a second, I'm fine now, I'm grand, I have the drugs, have a few drinks now and again, that kind of an idea, I'm doing okay? Or did you know that you were hitting rock bottom?
Well, I knew, like, at that time, I had to be lucky all the time. Like, the girls only had to be lucky once, you know. And that was the way I lived my life, like, yeah, you know. So yeah. I was always kind of watching myself between girls and everybody else, you know, that, you know, any avoiding trouble, avoiding detection. That was my life. Like, when it came to it then, like, I was handed to the girls, really, by one of my customers. And
when you say customers, who are you talking about there?
Somebody I was selling stuff to.
Okay, yeah.
So basically, there was like a setup and I got caught. But to this day now, like, I do think about that individual as somebody that done me a huge favour.
Huge favour, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, if I kept going the way I was going, like, things were getting way out of hand at that stage.
You were handed in, right?
Yeah.
What was that feeling when you were literally handed in and it was kind of like you're caught, you're done?
Shock.
Shock, yeah. But yeah. Okay, shock. Did you feel at that stage, right, okay, where am I going here? As in, I'm at the edge of a cliff here now. Am I hitting the floor here?
I'll tell you exactly how I felt. I didn't ever think I was doing anything wrong because everybody that I hung around with lived that life, do you know what I mean? That circle of people were all involved in what I was doing. It was normal. It was perfectly normal for us to be doing what we were doing amongst our peers. When I got caught then, I realized, yes, I'm doing something seriously wrong and seriously out of the way here. Like, and I had to accept it and take it on the chin. Do you know, like, then I suppose from there, then once I got caught then, you know, the acquaintances started disappearing.
Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden, it's like when you lift the 10-10-20 bag and all the mice start running in different directions. Yeah. They started to obviously cower away. Did you notice as well, while you were in your peer group that were obviously doing the same things as you, did you look outside your peer group and kind of go, well, look, those guys are over there. They seem to be happy out doing what they're doing. They're not doing drugs, but they seem to be happy out. Did it ever enter your head at the time that, you know, I would rather not be in the lifestyle I'm in. I would rather be in that lifestyle out there. They're having a few drinks. They're having the crack. They might be driving the car home or whatever.
That did. Like, I'd always say there was a time when I wanted to change but I wasn't committed to change. That's a really important difference. But, when I decided I wanted to change, I approached TCs I wanted to get an education. Like, work had dried up because, like, I had no qualifications or skills or anything like that. I had loads of jobs, but on paper, I had no junior cert, you know what I mean? So when I decided I wanted to change, I went to TCs and got my equivalent of the junior cert at the age of 23, 24.
Brilliant,
But, like, I was still both sides of the fence while I was in there. Like, I wasn't being 100% honest with them. And I got caught while I was there, like, you know. And they were pretty disappointed because I did really, really well.
You were showing major potential, yeah.
Yeah, and it was...
And did you find it hard? Because obviously, pre this podcast, you told me about obviously speaking to somebody. When they found out the truth, that you weren't obviously telling them everything, was it hard to rebuild that trust?
Well, I don't know. Did I ever rebuild it? Like, in fairness, now I've gone back in recent years and done talks and things like that. But the particular person now that stays with me was my probation officer. Like, I remember when I went back into him after the whole lot came to light, and I could see the hurt in his eyes. Like, you know, he was genuinely good plans for me. Do you know what I mean? And that's something that stayed with me today. Like, and I've, you know, most recently when I was doing my research on that, like I picked up the phone and I rang him. No problem, I'll help you out. Like, he was always there to kind of help. I never seen a probation officer as that. I always seen probation as part of the Gardaí.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't tell them, obviously couldn't tell them anything about what I was doing on the sly, because you just can't do that. You can't talk about them things, you know. So when I seen how hurt he was anyways, you know, it was something that there was a lot of learning in that for me. Like, you know, this person genuinely cared. You know, you should have been honest.
He was out for you. Now, speaking of TCs, you had a good time there, apart from the obvious, as you spoke about there a second ago. You learned a lot. You gained a lot of friendships in there and definitely found out a lot about yourself. Speaking of qualifications, what other bits and pieces did you do within TCs to help you with qualifications?
Well, like, there was woodwork classes and there was welding and stuff like that. I actually made a trailer as part of my project. One of the projects, I made a fireplace as another, like, and there was excursions out to Petersburg. Yeah. You know, you were mixing with your peers. There was actually, at the time, there was a really good course, which was heavy plant machinery. So we were getting tickets for, like, diggers, dumpers, teleporters, all that kind of stuff. That was, at the end of, like, obviously, when that happened, I left. Because, you know, like, they were put out by it. Like, you know, I couldn't go into them after it happened. I just, I suppose, riddled with guilt.
The guilt. Yeah, there's the heaviness. And the obstacle there. So, obviously, you got caught. You went to court.
Mm.
Things didn't go your way.
Yeah.
Let's call a spade a spade. Court appearances, was it difficult in court? Was it, were you embarrassed in court? Were you angry in court? How'd you feel?
In court now, to be honest with you, like, I accepted I was going to prison for a while, and like everything around that time, then, you know, what I was kind of saying, probably going to pick up another charge or two. It never really concerned me. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you were there and that was it. You were in this.
Yeah. But yeah, it couldn't get any worse kind of a thing. So I was in that mindset, like, lost the house, lost the partner at the time, drinking, using more and more and more. And I just said to myself one morning, I said, you know what, I can't wait to get in there and get on with it.
Like,
like, the guards were kind of, I suppose, playing games, trying to get me to kind of break and give names and all that stuff. And sure, you could never do something like that, you know. So all that stuff was really hard to deal with. So, like, I said to the judge, I said, will you do me a favour and send me to prison, please, and get in and get on, like. But they done everything else but put you away.
But you have a charm about you, and a very open nature about you, which I think is you know, I think a lot of people would find that fantastic, in the sense that I find you very open, and you're a good lad as well. Jail. You went to jail, obviously. How daunting was that when you walked in the door, first of all? Here I am, this is it. I know you said already, send me to jail and all that, but did you go to jail then and go, ooh, right, okay, I asked to go here, what's going on?
Well, like, you know, jail is supposed to deter people from crimes, and in fairness, it does, like, you know, but for the most part, they're just fellas like me that are in there, like, you know, they've made some stupid mistakes in the moment, you know, when they were off their heads or whatever, or, you know, made some mistakes out of desperation and that type of thing. You know, there's all that type of side to prison that you don't really see. Now, obviously, there's dangerous people in there as well, like, but for the most part, they're segregated from everybody and protected from themselves, even in some cases, you know what I mean? So when I got to prison, I just said to myself, you know what, I'm here now, get the head down, go to the education unit. Like, I had this rationalization in my head that it's 3 years for college. I'm going to be here for 3 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, no, fair play.
Let's do that while I have the security of prison, while I don't have to worry about my bills, getting a house, any of that stuff, my responsibilities. I just mind yourself.
Your responsibility was there at that time.
Just mind yourself and do what you can with this time.
Did you build up relationships in prison?
Yeah. There was lots of nice old fellas in there. Like, and I'm still in touch with a good few of them.
Good.
Like, a couple of them. One lad in particular, he was a lifer, like. And you couldn't imagine building up a relationship with somebody that has been sent to prison for life. But I had like a really difficult time in there when I lost all my clothes because they were signed out because they weren't tagged. And it really, like, you know, so literally everything was gone, even the clothes on my back at this stage. Like, wow. And I was arguing with the officer that signed them out. And this particular man came over. He said, look, don't worry about it. He said, I've clothes here. Come on over here. And he gave me a load of clothes and that. And, you know, I thought that was really, really nice of him. And I needed them at the time. Like, so...
Yeah, he was there when you needed him.
Yeah, really. But like, you take that into context now. Like, he's seen a moment where I was struggling, like, but at another particular moment in his life, he'd done something unimaginable and got a big sentence for it, like, do you know what I mean? And, you know, in the moment, you know, in this particular moment with me, he showed empathy to my situation, you, do you know what I mean? So he's not a bad guy, do you know, that's my point.
Yeah.
He might have done something in a split second, but...
Obviously, there was an awful lot of vulnerability too when, obviously, somebody takes something like your clothes. And I'm sure there was a lot of vulnerabilities in jail anyway, where all your privileges pretty much were taken away, apart from kind of maybe building up one or two privileges that might allow you to do certain things.
Yeah.
But that had to be very, very difficult. Let's talk about the redemption.
Mm.
There was a time in your life, obviously, you went into jail and you said, I'm here now, let the therapy begin, pretty much. Let's get Damien Quinn back on track. Tell me about that boiling point where, obviously, the top of the kettle
blew off
and you decided, knuckle down, get the head going here. What courses did you start to do?
Well, I don't like it was a FITAC Level 5 overall business award that I kind of sat in on. So that was like commuter, word processing and all that kind of stuff, business administration and all that type of thing. And I done really well with them things. And I done like an introduction to business studies with the Open University. Done really well with that, some level sixes. I even done a small bit of journalism.
Excellent.
An introduction to it, but it wasn't really a route I could see myself going down. But there was a good bit of reflection stuff as well, like, and I suppose there was a bit of drug awareness and that type of stuff, which I suppose supported me at the time in there. Like,
that's what I was going to ask you. Were you clean going in?
No, no.
You weren't clean going in?
No.
So obviously jail also helped you to detox, get your act together there on that level as well.
I was I got an awful hammering before I went in.
Really?
Yeah, I got into a scrap in the courthouse and it didn't turn out too well anyways. But when I went in, I was hallucinating for, I'd say, the best part of 2 or 3 weeks. You know, at nighttime, you'd be kind of, things leaving. You don't get any kind of medication or anything like that to assist you with, not unless you're on heroin and you need some sort of methadone or something like that. There isn't a lot of that in there. Like, I was just cold turkey, let's say.
So the tooth fairy was coming to visit you every night, pretty much in your dreams.
Yeah, but like, and like, in fairness, like, I, through that time, like, I had already reached out to the education unit, got my name on that, going to the gym, then started to walk on the treadmill, that type of stuff. So I went down to the computer workshops and got a job with them then as well. So, you know, like, I was starting how I
planned to move on.
Yeah.
It's brilliant that you've done that, because obviously I've often said it about even secondary schools. If you want to get on well in secondary school, get involved in everything, no matter what it is, no matter how good you are at it or bad for that matter. And you did that in jail. You literally grabbed it with both hands and went all that route. And thankfully, to this day, it has stood to you. Mm. Now, obviously, prison was over. I'm going to do a Shawshank Redemption now for a second. You walk outside the door and the sun beams into your eyes. What is Damien Quinn thinking?
I got the map of Ireland and I threw a felt pen at it and it hit Athlone. So I said, I'll go there now when I get out.
Really? Really?
So I moved to Athlone then when I got out. Like, they let me go with the bus pass and the price of a B&B for a night, and that was it then.
That was it?
Yeah, find your way kind of thing. But in fairness, EASIO were linking in to kind of find employment opportunities and all that type of stuff. EASIO were the Irish Association for Social Inclusion Opportunities, but they do a lot of work with ex-offenders and that. And there was another guy who would come in and do AA, and he was an auctioneer. And he got me a place then in one of his units, you know, that he managed. So it wasn't too bad. Like, it was, but like, only for that now I would have been paddle your own canoe kind of thing. Yeah. But.
So your first employment after coming out, pretty much you had the B&B, you stayed overnight maybe and had a shower the next morning. What was your first employment?
My first employment when I got out was self-created, believe it or not, with another prisoner. We'd done a magazine. Now, up until that time, I had been trying to get jobs, but vetting kept letting me down. And then what they did was they got me into a project similar to TC's up there, but I was going back doing level 3 again and level 4, and I just seen it as a waste of time. So, but myself and another guy had this idea of a Galway 365 magazine. It'd be on the trains coming to Galway. It'd be an entertainment guide.
And great idea.
We got it up and running. We got 2 print runs out of it, but then he disappeared. So
he left that loan. He threw the felt tip in at another.
So that was the end of that. Like, yeah. Was meant to be as well, you know. I always say that, like, yeah. But anyhow, when he disappeared, and obviously I couldn't get work, and I was getting really, really, the darkness started sitting back in again, you know.
Okay.
The addiction came back around, and
did you go back hard in it?
Yeah. I went right into it again, and problems started creeping in. I walked into somebody's house I thought was my own, disorientated out in my head. And they even said it, like, they said it to people, like, they said he was extremely disorientated when he came in. Like, I was after taking an awful heap of yolks, and I was traveling around the country to different people and that type of stuff, and pissing everybody off along the way as well. And
did you get help for that then straight away? Did you get help, or did somebody else get help for you?
My dad found me, and he got me into Coombe Wirra.
Okay.
In Brewery in Limerick. So I'd done the 12 weeks there, like, and but the first night after getting out of there, I went straight to the pub, like, you know. I don't know why, but I did. And I had to get out of Dodge for a while, because, as I said, like, there was lots of different people kind of looking for me at the time, and, you know, I got way in over my head, and
It got frightening then at that stage.
Yeah. So,
and did you feel, God, I know this sounds a bit heavy-handed, but did you feel that there was nearly like a hit out on you?
It was heading that way. I would describe myself as a bit of a coffin dodger at that time. Do you know what I mean? Like, but then I got going then, and I went to England. And I said, I'd chance England out for a while. And I got a job with a debt management company in England. Like, and I was giving people advice on how to manage their finances. And I upped my eyeballs in debt for drugs. Do you know what I mean? Of all people to be giving advice, like, but... that job, and that didn't work out then. And then, obviously, then after that, then I found homelessness in the UK for a while. And again, Dad found me, got me back, and I had to go in and kind of recuperate after a bad dose of psychosis, drug-induced psychosis. So that recovery took a good six months or so, and then I came home, and then I was back in Tuam, and I was accountable. You see, that was the whole problem. When I went away to Athlone, I was accountable to nobody.
Yeah, came back into the hive of the action.
When I came home to the people that mattered to me, that I cared about, I was accountable to them, like, do you know what I mean? And I didn't want to put them through what I had put them through previously, and that was the beginning. Now, if I had my time over again, leaving jail, I would have gone straight home, because I would have been accountable. I would have had that sense of responsibility to them people, not to upset them and hurt them again. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah. So, I suppose the situation was you probably wanted to see, would you be able to, you know, be independent probably on your own when you did go to Athlone at the time? Maybe all those things might have come into your head, you know. Mm. Then, let's put it this way, integrating back into society, and obviously you found it a bumpy road, as you said, they're going to England, doing the Athlone thing and all that. Did you find it extremely hard to integrate back into society? And did you find it hard, or were you even open with people about your jail time?
I didn't hide it. Like, you know, I was actually quite proud of the achievements in prison. Do you know what I mean? Like, in fairness, the education and the training and all that stuff is every bit as good as it is outside. Do you know what I mean? So I was really proud of all that. Now, what I struggled with was when I applied myself to certain things, applying for a house, applying for jobs, applying for volunteering, applying for coaching. You know, you have to go back to, well, you did this a few years ago, like, you know.
Yeah.
we're not going to give you a chance here.
Yeah.
They didn't actually say it, but, like, you know, when you've applied and that comes up, that conversation, you don't hear from them again, like, you know. So, yeah. You know, the reason being is because that bit of background is following you around like a bad smell. So, so that, my own opinion was, we get sent to prison to as punishment, okay?
Yeah.
For a period of time determined by the state, you know. We accept that, and I'm not even going to even try and, you know, defend my behaviour. Like, I know I deserved prison at the time, do you know? But when we get out then, we're punished secondarily in the community because all of these systematic barriers are in our way as we try to get on and move on. And that really bothers me, that stuff, do you know? Because not everybody is resilient around the nose. A lot of people just say, do you know what, it's too hard to even try here, like, why bother?
Yeah.
And gravitate back to the label, like, and that's the reality is that's what happens.
So your feeling obviously is you did the crime, you did the time, and your time was obviously on what you did, as in, as you said, you got the 3 years for the drug addiction at the time and sale of drugs, let's call a spade, that kind of an idea. And then you came out rehabilitated. And you feel that you're literally let down by people and by the state.
I wouldn't say that, no, in fairness. Like, I suppose these systematic barriers pop up because there is a law there that protects children and vulnerable adults from anybody that has the capacity to endanger them.
Yeah.
Now, that gets kind of skewed in, like, I know in one particular instance, I went for a job working nights on an assembly line in a big factory floor. Very unlikely I was going to meet children of vulnerable adults in that situation. But I had to go through a vetting process that came from that statement, you know, affecting children and vulnerable adults. So it's not society's fault. Like, you know, these barriers are put in place by law and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you know, if somebody is genuinely actively trying to distance themselves from the life they used to live, you know, they should be afforded a few chances along the way.
And progress, obviously, progress to the next stage and show what you can do.
Providing they can prove it and demonstrate that they are on this journey, you know. So,
yeah.
I see. And when you take historical convictions into account, they remain static. They don't change. Like, they don't, like, we change, but they don't change. They will always be the same. That piece of information happened on that date in my life. And that won't change.
Yeah, those two words, criminal record.
Criminal convictions, so, you know.
Moving on then to, you know, brighter skies, your volunteerism, education, work-wise and all that. You spent time as an auctioneer or working in an auctioneer's. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I worked with Pat Callanan in Athenry. Pat, he's a great guy now in fairness. He's really, really good to me and... He took me on. Like, I was coming from, like, working nights in a distribution company and I wanted to get a day job and start a family with my partner and all that type of thing. And I was looking and looking and looking for work and I sent my CV in to Pat and he called me in on the based on my CV. Now, he never asked about criminal convictions and he'd tell you that himself, you know, but a week after starting with him, he found out about my past and pulled me up on it, like, and we had the discussion. And I said, look, if it's a problem, I said, I can go back to where I came from. But he said, no. He said, look, he said, we all have things from our past that we'd like, that we may not be very proud of and that we'd like to forget about and move on from. He said, you seem to know what you're doing, so let's give it a go. Like, and I work with Pat right up until a few months ago. And, you know, he came onto a few podcasts with me with the Department of Justice. And there was another one that is actually coming out now soon. It's called Unlocking Potential.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's going to be launched now soon. But talks with other people in the criminal justice system. He'd done all that thing, like, you know, and he didn't have to. You know, he gave his time to that. And, he's a great guy. And, you know, it was
hard. He's seen something in you, though, Damien. He's seen something in you. And I think that kind of shows exactly what you were getting back to there a second ago about the whole idea of the criminal past. I think it's very important as well, you know, if you want, say for instance, he gave you an opportunity. You showed him what you could do and what type of person you are. And when he found out the truth, he went, no, wait a second now. Damien is a good guy. I like him. I like him around. He's done a great job. So should that not be something that the system look at and say, well, look, if you go there and you get an opportunity and you show them and give them, give them all the evidence that you are a good guy, you've been rehabilitated, you've changed your views, you've changed your thoughts, and you have a cleaner lifestyle or whatever, give them a chance.
Yeah, well, look, he'd be an advocate that, like, yeah. Actually, he wrote a letter and said the very same thing. Like, you know, it's actually on the Working to Change website, the letter he wrote, but it was advice to other employers, like, saying, telling them, like, you call somebody in based on their skills, you know, that suits your company. Think about the skills rather than what they might have done a few years ago, you know, and see how would it impact on your job, you know,
yeah.
And give them a chance. You've taken the time to call them in for an interview. They've attended. Obviously, they're looking for work. So, you know, make your decision based on the skills that
provided and to show your work ethic. Sure, yeah. You have a wonderful work ethic. Speaking of your work ethic, you're a guy that always likes to help other people out. As you know, you've gone back, you've done the full circle with TC's as well, where you went back and advised and had a chat with the gang that are back there at the moment, and that's wonderful. And you've done the House of Commons thing, which is absolutely fantastic as well, gone back and had a chat with them, telling the House of Commons how to look after people that might have been incarcerated at the time. And for that, a huge commendation to you for that too. But let's talk about, for a second, Spare Nua, New Horizons.
Yeah.
I know that you have visions ahead of helping people and that kind of an idea. Talk about Spare Nua for a second.
Well, Spare Nua is an idea that comes from the personal journey that we've discussed, like, you know, the problem of vetting, the problem of trying and not getting on. So while I was doing my master's with UCC, I came across a recognition of prior learning course with Equal Ireland. Now, I must say Equal Ireland has played a massive part in my journey, and I have a lot to thank them for. But Equal Ireland, they ran this recognition of prior learning course, and it's where people have experiential learning. They get that assessed and validated by educational institutes. So I said, you know, that makes sense from my perspective that I have a journey of rehabilitation.
Yeah.
You know, I have that could be documented and that could be assessed and validated as well. Like, so sitting down, seeing those two things working together, I wrote a paper called Spare Nua, and it was Life After Prison for the Reformed Individual, Opportunities or Barriers. And there was loads of different people that supported us in that. There was guards, probation officers, prison governors, social enterprise and employment project managers, legislators.
Yeah.
they're all
the people that you had a wonderful experience with in the past. So
Even like with the guards, like one of the things that I'd always kind of make a point of is all my life growing up, they were always seen as the problem, but through my growth, I realized it wasn't them that was the problem, it was me. Do you know what I mean? If I wasn't doing what I was doing, they wouldn't have been on my case. So that's a very important point to make. But
yeah.
Going back to the people being involved in this, like, they all liked the whole idea of this certificate of commitment to change, you know. So somebody that is actively engaging and doing all the right things, that they would go through, they would document that journey with me, yeah, in Spare Nua, and we would hand that over then to probation, to the guards, to assess. And if they were happy that there was a certain level of, certain benchmarks were hit, that they would sign off on this and say, currently there is evidence of commitment to change here. This person needs a chance. Give them the certificate and let them get on. And it's not a rigid, you know, historical thing. It's an ongoing assessment model. So I pitched that idea anyway to Social Entrepreneurs Ireland. I got a Facebook link. I seen a Facebook link about, you know, talk to us about your ideas. So I sent in my idea around this, and they got in touch and they said, would you like to pitch to get onto the academy? So I went and I pitched and I got onto the academy with 60 other people. Now, the Ideas Academy West was whittled down to like 15, and Life's Too Good Foundations is in Galway. They sponsor that, and so I got through the academy. We had like idea generation. We had we had validation workshops, we had storytelling workshops, all that type of thing. And at the end, then we got to pitch for funding. So I pitched and I got seed funding of them. So that seed funding now is going into the development of my own website and where people like me can contact me. Do you know what I mean? And we can start working on this thing and making it real and tangible. So after that, then just 2 weeks ago, Social Entrepreneurs Ireland contacted me and said there is a place on the Action Lab. So the Action Lab now is one-on-one business support for 10 high potential social entrepreneurs, to make their idea real. So that's going to be for the next 5 months. They give us a bursary and another opportunity to pitch for more funding. So it's really, really, it's unreal, like, that, you know, this notion in your head is actually becoming something.
It's snowballing into something really big for you. And I just think it's fantastic. I think your story is amazing. I follow you, as you know, on social media. And every time I see a post up, it's either you in an extremely happy family environment, or it's you moving on with your life in another very, very positive step. It's what you surround yourself with, Damien. You've surrounded yourself with so much positivity over the years, over the last couple of years, that this is the fruits of your labor is obviously coming to fruition now. This is you. And I just want to say, just from myself anyway, that I think you're a massive inspiration. And I just want to say a huge congratulations to you, to your family. You have a wonderful family. And more power to you. You're a tour de force. You really are.
Cheers. Thanks for that.
So you're with the Rural Development.
Yeah, Galway Rural Development, yeah.
So what's your projection there now? If I was to ask you business-wise, what's your projection? What's your thoughts there?
Well, with Galway Rural Development now, I studied social enterprise and cooperatives, and the role came up for Social Enterprise Regeneration Project Coordinator, and it was a COVID support that is funded by the Dormant Accounts Fund. And And basically what we're doing is we're rolling out supports for social enterprises to move their business offerings online.
Okay.
So again, it's pretty much like, it's like the Ideas Academy in a way, like, you know, there's all these different business functions that...
Yeah, different layers, yeah.
So like there was procurement workshops, idea generation, human resource management, financial planning, corporate social responsibility and digital marketing. So they're all free supports to social enterprises in Galway, Mayo and Roscommon. So that I am doing what I've studied for, like, you know, finally, like, you know. And yeah, it's the last year, there's been a lot of wins. Like, I graduated from two different colleges. I got, as you said, over to England to the...
House of Commons.
And,
fantastic.
Met the boys as well. I'm sure you're aware of the two Norries, the podcast as well.
Oh, yeah. I know the lads.
Those two guys are actually going touring the country now, and they've dates in Cork Opera House and all that type of thing.
Yeah, they sure have.
You know, so they kind of helped me with the whole story thing. Obviously, speaking at the launch of the Social Enterprise and Employment Strategy for the Department of Justice here, that was another big deal. Like, Helen McIndee opened up and I shared my story and what the strategy means to me and people like me. And and the Ideas Academy, of course, and Social Entrepreneurs Ireland. So 2021, even though we've had like a tough year all around,
You've had a good year. I've had a lot of wins.
And it's I have a lot to be thankful for.
You have.
And, you know, and I am I'm happy I got here, and I have big plans going forward as well, you know. So.
Well, you definitely do. Knowing you, you do, because there's no stopping you now. I can guarantee you that. And you wouldn't know, we might say, I might be ringing you about potholes in years to come. You might be a local representative yet. You wouldn't know. We might have your face up on the side of a telephone pole at some stage. But look, I was mad to do this podcast with you for a long time, and thankfully we're here. Mm-hmm. And we had the chat, and I enjoyed it. Thank you so, so much. Continued success to you and to your family. Have a good one, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, Roland.
Thank you. Thanks.